Hare Krishna. So today is not a usual Srimad Bhagavatam class, because it is the special occasion, the disappearance of three very important personalities: Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, Srila Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. So Sutapa Prabhu mentioned those in the morning, so we'll discuss a little more about each of these. All three of these personalities are exceptionally advanced, renounced, devotional acharyas, persons I'm not qualified to speak on at all. And there is so much that could be said about each one that would probably be the topic of several seminars. So what I'll do is I'll just pick up on a few important points regarding these persons, and maybe discuss a pastime or two about them. So the Goswamis, obviously the Goswamis are there on the altar. The picture is there just beneath Sri Sri Gaur Nidai. These are six Goswamis who were either directly instructed by or intimately connected with Sri Krishna Chaitanya, and who were his direct limbs, if you like, for the propagation of devotional service. Mahaprabhu ordered them to write books, to condense the subject matter of devotion, and specifically Rupa Sanatana Goswami, they wrote. And the other Goswamis were involved in many different services. They are each of them characterized by their intense renunciation and deep respect and love for Krishna, and deep feelings of lack of qualification in entering the subject also. That is a theme we come across in any discussion connected to the Goswamis, how they feel that they are completely unqualified to have been given this task and this role by Mahaprabhu. So these three persons are very special. Of course, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami are two of the Goswamis. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is not counted amongst the list of those. But Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is the person to whom we are indebted because he provided us the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So that is his specific contribution. And he was a very deep, philosophically enlivened individual. Sri Sri Radha Gokulanam Ki, Sri Sri Gaur Nidai Ki, Sri 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 Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki. And he considered that he was continuing the work of another great personality, Vrindavan Das Thakur. So Vrindavan Das Thakur was the autobiographer of the Lord, and he wrote a book called the Chaitanya Mangal. Now later on, the name of that book was changed to Chaitanya Bhagavat. So within that particular book, he has covered the pastimes of the Lord, and specifically the earlier pastimes, in great detail. And if any of you have read the Chaitanya Bhagavat or have heard the recitation of it, it is very, very sweet. It's a very wonderfully written, wonderfully composed, poetic work which just brings out devotion. And the language that's used in describing the pastimes of Mahaprabhu is very, very refined and very beautiful. And many wonderful pastimes of the Lord are described in that book. His earlier pastimes as a child, some of his naughty pastimes, then his various leelas in his argumentative phase, where he defeated scholars left, right, and center, and created a name for himself as being a rather difficult logician. And therefore he managed to annoy many people who were just waiting for him to give up his study of logic and actually focus on devotion. But of course, Mahaprabhu never you could say, was bereft of devotion. That was his entire constitution from day one. Because the moment he appeared in this world, it was for the purpose of adopting the mood of Srimati Radharani and well, he's Krishna himself. So how can he be bereft of anything? But later on, after the argumentative phase, after he defeats the Digvijay Pandit, the Keshav Kashmiri, and many other things go on, and so many other pastimes are described. The work that was composed by Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur started to get rather large. So some of the pastimes were described in a condensed way, especially the later pastimes. And so the Vaishnavas in Vrindavan, they asked Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami to conclude that work, to complete it, to describe in detail those pastimes which were not described by his predecessor. Otherwise, they would be forgotten, and the people in future would simply not know about them. So he always had this mood that I'm not creating a composition that is going to exceed or surpass what my predecessor has done. He was saying, this is the authorized, dear, confidential associate of the Lord. And the Vaishnavas have asked me to write this book in which I hope to elaborate on some of the detailed and later pastimes of the Lord, particularly his pastimes in Puri, in the Gambhira, and after taking sannyas. Those are more elaborately described. And so he took inspiration in Vrindavan. After he received this request from the Vaishnavas, he went before the Madan Mohan deity and he begged for permission. He said, I've been asked to do this by the Vaishnavas, but I would like your empowerment to do so. And it said at that time that the garland that Madan Mohan was wearing fell down. This was taken as a sign by all present that this is the endorsement of the Lord. And so he began this task. And to help him, he had the notes of Srila Swarup Damodar Goswami, who recorded Mahaprabhu's later pastimes. Of course, he was one of the few people who had direct access to Mahaprabhu, especially in his later pastimes. And so he compiled all these in note form. And so he used these notes to write the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but also it is said that Madan Mohan directly was dictating to him. So there's a very special, when we read this Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is a very special and very potent work composed by this great person based on the notes of a confidential associate of the Lord directly and also at the request of the Vaishnavas. That really is almost like a recipe for a success in a spiritual endeavor. If you have been authorized, requested by the Lord to do something, and you have also received that request from the devotees, and have received their permission, and vice versa, then auspicious things can happen. And if you happen to have sufficient purity and internal purity, so that there is some connection with the Lord, then he may dictate also. So that is the mood offered really by, that is the mood adopted and lived really by anyone who's making any contribution in spiritual life. Whether it's giving a class, whether it's doing a service, whether it's distributing books, whether it's writing. All of those three components really are essential fuel for the successful outcome of any project. So when some of those are missing, sometimes we may have a great grand project that we want to do, but we haven't sought the blessings of the devotees. We've disregarded the devotees. We've considered some of them to be not worthy of consultation. Then the potency that such an enterprise could have is reduced, naturally. So that's it's like a subtle point, that success happens in spiritual life. When we get the blessings of the devotees, we please the devotees, it's endorsed by Krishna, and he has given permission. And also when there's sufficient purity that we are sufficiently empowered by the Lord to do so. There are many people with good intentions, but relatively fewer of those are actually empowered by the Lord. That's not really a problem. It just means that one has to be careful. Because sometimes our devotional offerings could be potentially troublesome. If we do not think of them and plan them and execute them carefully. With all the best intents in the world, we might actually do something that's not so beneficial. But still Krishna will accept the mood of it. And if there is sincerity, he accepts that. So Prabhupada also is obviously our acharya, our founder acharya, who himself said that Krishna was dictating his purports. His Bhaktivedanta purports, he said, dictated by Krishna. So that's why we have this special presentation. We have the Chaitanya Charitamrita with these nectarian verses accompanied by Srila Prabhupada's purports. And we get something really, really powerful. And the composition of this work is very interesting because Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, right in the start of every chapter, he glorifies the Goswamis, Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Raghunath Das Goswami. And at the end, he also thanks everyone. He thanks the community of devotees. He thanks the Lord himself and says that only by their permission am I writing. And he also thanks Vrindavan Das Thakur for his part in producing the Leela of the Lord and for inspiring him to continue it. So it's a very nice example. I mean, there's so much more that could be said, but our second personality, Raghunath Das Goswami, gave initiation to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, just described. Now, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami I've lost my order of things. I'll stick with Raghunath Das Goswami. I'll come to Raghunath Bhatta Goswami in a minute. But Raghunath Das Goswami, the connection with Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is that, as I mentioned, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was writing from the notes of Srila Swarup Damodar Goswami. Right? Now, Raghunath Das Goswami had memorized these notes from Mahaprabhu, and there were no other copies around. So here you have one person who is using directly these notes of Swarup Damodar and another great exalted Vaishnava, Raghunath Das, who has memorized entirely those notes. Now how did that happen? How did that come about? Well, the story of Raghunath Das is very interesting, and he had intimate association with Srila Swarup Damodar, especially and he witnessed the Lord's final pastimes. Raghunath Das himself was born in a very rich family, wealthy landowners. And so he was very, very comfortable, but he was disinterested. It happens, doesn't it, sometimes, that a person is born into massive wealth and they are completely disinterested. And someone else doesn't, and they spend their entire life trying to acquire wealth. It's just interesting. And of course, you get the other combinations as well, where someone has a great deal of wealth and they're completely addicted, and someone has no wealth and they're also disinterested. So how it works out is very interesting. So here, Raghunath Das Goswami fits the category of someone who had a great deal of wealth and all the support and everything that he could have wanted, but he actually had no real interest in it. And he had some association with Balaram Acharya, who was a great devotee of Mahaprabhu in his youth. And this personality introduced Raghunath Das Goswami to Haridas Thakur. And it is from Haridas Thakur that Raghunath Das Goswami received the impetus, the feeling of a desire for renunciation. It is from him that the desire to live an austere life focused on the Lord, that became more and more manifest. It often takes a person who is walking the talk to inspire us. Because many people can be talking of renunciation, But the actual demonstration and practice of it is something quite different. So from Haridas Thakur, he had a fantastic example. And Raghunath Das Goswami, he was very, very eager to meet the Lord. And so on one occasion, he ran away from home and met him when the Lord arrived in Shantipur. And there, he met Mahaprabhu, he offered him his respects, and he had a whole exchange with him. And Mahaprabhu gave him an answer, or spoke to him, and he said, "You should go back home. This is not the time. Control yourself," he said. "Don't be over enthusiastic, control yourself, and keep your love for Krishna in your heart." Obviously, within the family setting, within the family situation, he could not. The family members obviously were more interested in money, so this was not a very strong aspect of their focus. So he said. So Mahaprabhu told him, "Do not declare your feelings for Krishna externally. Keep them internal and meditate on them." And he said, "At some point, it will naturally happen that Krishna will call you. So for the time being, you're still young," and he was just a young man at this point. "Don't create too much fuss. Just go home, just be peaceful. And at some point, Krishna will, he will call you." So he did that. Raghunath Das went home. He got married. It's described to a girl of exquisite beauty. But he was completely disinterested. And very soon it became the case that he would start to spend his time in a building just outside the main house. Within the compound, he would just spend time in there. And his parents became very upset. They became very concerned. The father, the family members became concerned that this person is developing too much of a renounced mood to life. And he has everything, and we expect him to continue the family tradition. Everything is set up. It's perfect. Family situation is perfect. He has all the wealth he could ever want. So they said, "Look, we can't let this happen." So they employed 10 guards to make sure he didn't leave or try to escape, because he'd already escaped once. And Mahaprabhu sent him back. And they thought, "This is just going to happen again." So this is a different type of coercion to the one that we may get today. Sometimes parents are coercive in different ways. But often, these days, it's more emotional coercion. "We'll never talk to you again." That's a common one which many devotees say. "If you join these Hare Krishnas, we'll never talk to you again." And there are some devotees whose parents have done that. And then there are others who create different difficulties in different ways. Some come to the temple and complain. Yes, that's happened. "Come to the temple. Look, it's not time for him. Let him come home now. And later on, when he's old, he can do this thing." That's the standard. That's the standard Indian concept. That devotion and worship and temple life is for old age. When there's nothing left for you to do and your teeth have fallen out and you can barely walk, that's the time to be engaged in service to Krishna. Now the time is to enjoy your senses. Raise your family. Have fun. Go on holidays. Earn wealth. Make us proud. So, the same thing you can see happened 500 years ago. Nothing has changed. The mood of those who are materially engrossed and materially engaged will continue forever. Deha patya kalatradi shivatma senya shvasatsupi te sham pramatu nidhanam pashyanapi na pashyati nidrayariyate naktam vyavayena chivavaya divacharte hayarajan kutumba bharaneneva. These verses from the start of the second canto explains the life of those addicted to material life. It's a life which is spent working throughout the day, working hard all day, and the night is spent in sex indulgence. That's basically life summed up. So with that kind of life, it's a troublesome life. They think it's brilliant. But the devotees think, "Is this all there is to it? Is that all there is to it?" The same thing repeated day in, day out, year after year, life after life. And what's the end result? Well, that was never meant to be the end result in Krishna's creation. That was meant to be one of the stepping stones, one of the stages of life, one of the activities you do as part of life, but never the goal. So persons, families, situations which are very much focused on a goal of materialism, never like it when someone wants to renounce that materialism. So they employed these guards, and they would go with him everywhere, and they would make sure he didn't stray. And so he was there, you can imagine, internally he was simply focused on the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu, and externally he was constrained by all these different things. Well, one day an opportunity presented itself, and the family guru came, and with him he left. That itself is a whole story. But essentially, Raghunath Das took the opportunity to escape at that point. And his intention was to head to Puri, where he heard the Lord was staying. So he actually went in the opposite direction to Puri, because he knew immediately these guards are going to come out after me. As soon as they realize I've left, immediately there'll be search parties sent to capture him, take him back. So he went in the opposite direction, traveled for some time. The guards went off towards Puri, where they expected him to go. They didn't find anything, searched and searched and searched, and then they came back. And after some time, Raghunath Das Goswami turned around and went a considerably longer distance, and arduous and very tiring. And for days he walked. And then he arrived at Puri, and he went to the Gambira, where he heard Lord Chaitanya was there. And he was introduced to Lord Chaitanya. He met him again by the different associates of the Lord. Mahaprabhu said, "Feed him nicely. He's undergone a very troublesome journey just to come here. Let him just stay for a few days and let him rest." So he did that. And then afterwards he approached Mahaprabhu. And this is his special, special connection with Mahaprabhu. That he approached Mahaprabhu and asked him, "What shall I do with my life? I'm only attracted by devotion to Krishna, and I've come to you. What shall I do?" And Mahaprabhu said, "Well, I think it is best if you take instruction from Swarup Damodar Goswami. I place you under his care." Mahaprabhu said, "I consider him actually more qualified and more suitable to instruct you. So I give you to him." So in that spirit, Raghunath Das actually spent a lot of time with Swarup Damodar Goswami. And from that instruction of Mahaprabhu's, he worshipped him and served him and had great association with him. And it is during this phase that, of course, he was in touch with Swarup Damodar Goswami, and this is how he came to understand his diaries and to understand the pastimes of the Lord. And one thing with Raghunath Das Goswami is his exceptional renunciation. He's almost like an emblem of renunciation. When he arrived in Puri, he would initially beg just outside the gate of the Jagannath temple. And people would give alms and he would eat. In Puri, no one has to go hungry. That's a fact. Plenty of prasadam all the time. But he would beg and he would take whatever was supplied. And then later on, he started to reduce that. He started to reduce it bit by bit until right at the end, he was subsisting on only a little buttermilk. He would reject all the tasty, opulent items that were given. He literally just had a small amount of buttermilk. He would hardly sleep, as is the case with the Goswamis. He would chant the holy names of the Lord. He said 100,000 names, I believe, a day. He became so dear to Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu was happy that he's being taken care of by Swarup Damodar Goswami. So once upon a time, Raghunath Das said, "I want to meet Mahaprabhu. I want to hear something directly from Mahaprabhu." So he went to see Mahaprabhu. And he said, "You've caused me to leave my home. You've caused me to leave my life. And I've come here. Please tell me what I can do now." And Mahaprabhu said, "Well, I've already asked you to go and speak to Swarup Damodar Goswami. He can tell you exactly what to do. But if you want to hear something from me, then I'll say this to you." And this is what he said. So we'll recite this verse. It's a nice verse. It's a translation. Do not talk like people in general or hear what they say. You should not eat very palatable food, nor should you dress very nicely. Do not expect honor, but offer all respect to others. Always chant the holy name of Lord Krishna, and within your mind render service to Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. Purport by His Divine Grace. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in his Amrita Pravaha Bhasya that when a man and woman are married, they beget children and are thus entangled in family life. Talk concerning such family life is called Gramya Katha. A person in the renounced order never indulges in either hearing or talking about such subjects. He should not eat palatable dishes, since that is unfit for a person in the renounced order. He should show all respect to others, but should not expect respect for himself. In this way, one should chant the holy name of the Lord and think of how to serve Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada ki. Well, that is a wonderful meditation. That is the basis for Raghunath Das's future devotional life. These two verses. And these points that are made here are very interesting. Do not talk like people in general or hear what they say. Do not eat very palatably. Do not dress very nicely. These are things that Mahaprabhu expected of his top renunciates. You know the story of Sanatana Goswami when he was given a blanket and Mahaprabhu just glanced at it. And Sanatana Goswami immediately understood that Mahaprabhu does not approve of this. Because it was a fairly luxurious looking blanket. And so he went and exchanged it for a torn quilt. And all of the Goswamis are characterized by their extreme austerity. Their extreme control of eating, sleeping, and regulating all other activities to practically nil. It's interesting that as we go through devotional life, we will employ a balance that's different. In the Gita, it's explained that yuktahara viharasya, yukta chesta sakarmasu, yukta swapna vabodasya, yoga bhavati dukkaha. That by the practice of yoga, when one controls one's eating, sleeping, and recreation, through that practice of yoga, one can mitigate all miseries. And so it's about keeping that balance, neither eating too much, neither eating too little, neither sleeping too much, neither sleeping too little, neither having too much recreation or having none at all. So often, sometimes in the beginning, people adopt a level of renunciation that's too much for them. They make a decision that from tomorrow, and immediately, if you ever catch yourself doing this, from tomorrow, just be very careful. It probably is something from tomorrow that will only last for tomorrow. It might not, but more often than not, that's what happens. It's far better to have a sensible, well thought out program that also takes into account time, that takes into account your evolution through time, your spiritual progress through time, and also takes into account the multiple challenges that you will get over time. If those are taken into account, then you stand more chance of having a successful program. So in the beginning, your balance may be different. What is considered too much eating, too much sleeping, too much recreation, it might be of a certain level, and therefore we regulate it. But then in these latter stages, you see practically the balance is now completely at a different level. It's no longer 50%. It's no longer 50% sense gratification, 50% renunciation. I'll eat half the quantity I would like to eat. So these days I see everyone with these tiny plates coming for prasadam, which is interesting. It's an interesting development. And it's good, because people realize that we often eat too much prasadam. And especially we have this great austerity during the lockdown phase. I think everyone outside should appreciate the austerity we're doing here. Because we now have to eat all of the Mahaprasadam. So This is a very difficult task. The consequence is that everyone is probably eating too much, myself included. So this is how devotees will regulate their eating. Maybe a small plate, maybe half what you think. But then you come to the stage of a person like Raghunath Das Goswami, like Sanatana Goswami, like Rupa Goswami. And the balance is at a level where you think this is not possible to even survive. It's not, doesn't supply you the sufficient nutrients or... And you can see that these personalities are on a completely different level, where the nutritional composition of their diet is not even a factor. They sleep for an amount which probably scientists and doctors would consider to be unhealthy and akin to self-molestation. 1 or 2 hours a day. Who can understand that? When the recommended is 8 hours of sleep, you must get. Medically, most people should have 8 hours of sleep. Otherwise, a little less, a little more maybe, but that's required for you to be healthy. Can they possibly understand 2 hours? 1 hour? These Goswamis, Haridas Thakur, who had 2 hours of rest, sometimes it was not even 2 hours of rest. It was less than that. So there's something special going on here. That initial injunction that one regulates one's eating, sleeping, and recreation manifests at a level which is just inconceivable for most of us in the final stages of intense, extreme surrender to Mahaprabhu. And Raghunath Das Goswami is famous for his renunciation. Mahaprabhu was very, very pleased with him. And he gave him his personal Shila. Mahaprabhu used to carry this Shila from Govardhan Hill around, which was wetted by his tears. And he gave that to Raghunath Das Goswami. These are described as incalculably precious items. He also gave him a string of Gunja Mala. These are very, very precious items. Now, sadly for Raghunath Das Goswami, he had to witness the departure of the Lord. And he saw the Lord's departure, which is an occasion of obviously great joy and great sadness also, because that was why he had gone to Puri, to be with the Lord. And then Swarup Damodar also passed. He also left this world. So at that point, Raghunath Das left. He left Puri and he went to Vrindavan. He went there to fulfill another order of Lord Chaitanya that was given to him. And he went there to serve Srila Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis. And he assisted them in different ways. One of his most... we won't come to that. It's going to make the story too long. But I'll give you a couple of examples of his renunciation, the degree to which Krishna became obliged to him. He would obviously practice the same level of renunciation there in Vrindavan. And he had a lot of association from Srila Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami observed once that while Raghunath Das was at Radhakund, a pair of tigers had come to drink from the water. And he saw that Krishna was personally standing guard in case these tigers troubled Raghunath Das Goswami. Now, he wasn't aware of this. Raghunath Das Goswami wasn't aware. But he could see that here's Krishna directly protecting his devotee from what could be a very troublesome situation. And on another occasion, because he was so renounced, he would never make any arrangements for his own facilitation. So once Sanatana Goswami saw that while he was engaged in his bhajan, Raghunath Das was engaged in bhajan, Srimati Radharani was there. And she was drenched in perspiration because she was standing in the hot sun. And she was holding her veil and covering Raghunath Das Goswami. So he looked at this and he thought, this is someone very, very special. But he outwardly he manifested some irritation. And he said to Raghunath Das Goswami, "What is going on, Raghunath Das? We are supposed to be serving the divine couple. We are not supposed to be accepting service from them." He wasn't even aware. But he was chastised in this manner. These are the wonderful exchanges of the devotees who are more on the internal platform. And he was chastised and said, we do not take association from. And the same thing happened with Jiva Goswami and others later. We do not take service from Radha and Krishna. They are our objects of service. So he told him, look, get some kind of kutir built. And so he did that, and that is the start of the sort of the bhajan samadhis. You know, that's the kind of the first bhajan samadhi. Of course, possibly there were others as well, but it's said that he was the one. He would sit in a samadhi and he would chant. So you can see how he had no interest in his own personal protection, and the Lord became obliged to him. Therefore, we have to sometimes take care that our renunciation doesn't cause difficulties for others. Now, ultimately, if our renunciation is genuine, it will never cause difficulty. It will be something of great pleasure for others. But artificial renunciation can be a problem. Sometimes, this is always funny, sometimes people like to be renounced, so they, and especially when traveling, they think, I will travel light. And so they take a very small bag with hardly anything in it, and it's easier to get through security and everything, and they convince themselves they're traveling light. But they have the full intention that when they get to the other end, they will simply borrow all the items they need from everyone else. So Prabhu, I've forgotten my tilak. Can I borrow some tilak? Do you have a charger? I didn't bring a charger for my phone. Can I borrow this? Mosquito repellent. Oh, I forgot to bring some. Water tablets, if you go to some place where water is particularly bad. So this can happen sometimes, you know. A person likes to think that they're renounced, but they simply take from others. That's not a type of renunciation that I've ever found particularly inspiring. Renunciation for me is of the type of Raghunath Das Goswami, where you renounce and you have no further need of it. You are prepared to do without that item forever. Your existence simply does not depend on it. If you do depend on an item, have the decency to take it with you. Now, obviously, naturally, everyone will, from time to time, forget something. That happens, and we naturally help each other out. But rather, this is to just to contrast, just to give like almost a frivolous example of how our attempts at markata vairagya, monkey renunciation, can actually just end up causing more trouble to others. Whereas genuine renunciation, where others are naturally inspired to accommodate us if we've forgotten something, that leads to great benefit for the person who serves that person and for the person who is naturally renounced. So that example of renunciation was really exemplified by Raghunath Das Goswami. And what more can we say? He's an exceptional person. But I want to save a little bit of time for discussing Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. So he was another of the Goswamis. And he would recite the Bhagavatam. This was one of his specialities, that he would recite the Bhagavatam. And he remained a lifelong brahmachari by the order of the Lord, by the order of Lord Chaitanya. Not many of Mahaprabhu's direct associates actually were brahmacharis, or lifelong brahmacharis. We hear of Nakula Brahmachari and others. But he was one person who stayed lifelong as a brahmachari, Raghunath Bhatta. And he would prepare these wonderful items, delicious items. He excelled in cooking. So he was seen as someone who was very accomplished and very empowered. He would also sing kirtan. And it was so beautiful that he was called the Kirtan Acharya in Vrindavan when he would come, when he was there and he was singing. Now he would recite the Bhagavatam. It's described in four different tunes. They were so beautiful that Rupa Sanatan Goswami, his seniors, would come and listen. It said even Vyasadeva would come and listen to the recitation. Such a tremendous, tremendously empowered chanting. Now, in the past, I think we spoke on Rupa Goswami's either appearance or disappearance. There, we spoke about how the Govindaji deity was discovered by him when Krishna had personally come to him during his meditation and led him to a place where his location was revealed. And then the villagers, everyone, they brought out this deity of Govindaji. Well, it is actually Raghunath Bhatta Goswami whose disciple, and his disciple was Man Singh, the same Man Singh from Jaipur, who actually built that temple, the Radha Govindaji temple. So it was Raghunath Bhatta Goswami's disciple who built the temple that housed the deities that Rupa Goswami had discovered. And in this way he was fulfilling the order of the Lord to go and assist Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis. And he was also involved in excavating Radha Kund, Shyam Kund. So he very much had this mood that I am assisting and serving in the mood of Das Anudas, those who are already Das of my Lord Mahaprabhu. And that is also for him. For us, that's a wonderful exemplification of that mood. That he would serve in this capacity rather than wanting to be a leader or wanting some position himself. Just to be the unknown servant of the Lord. And this temple obviously is very famous. We mentioned it last time. It was Akbar was in power at that time, and he actually supplied some of the stone for building that temple. And then just look at the contrast, because as time evolved, and later on, then this Aurangzeb turned up, and he was a tyrant from the same Mughal line. Now initially you have the person supporting the temple, and then this individual later on destroyed it. Or sent his soldiers to damage the structure, and they succeeded in destroying the top three floors, because it was a great sign of and inflicted a harm on his prestige. But how could these people have such a magnificent temple with a bell and light and everything, and why are they allowed? No, I will destroy it. That's envy. So we see just how so many persons contribute to the development of Krishna consciousness. Mahaprabhu's contribution to Krishna consciousness, I mean, it's unparalleled. He's the Supreme Lord himself. He is Krishna consciousness, right? There's a person who is Krishna conscious, that's Mahaprabhu. You could just say he is Krishna consciousness. Because his mood, he's Radharani, and he's entirely conscious of Krishna all the time. There's nothing else to him, which is everything, of course. Nothing else means that is everything. Because there is nothing else except consciousness of Krishna. Everything else is a concoction, is a creation of ours and others. So that's Mahaprabhu, fully Krishna conscious. And then we all have the chance also to follow in those footsteps. We have the chance to contribute. We have the chance to serve the original Krishna conscious progenitor, if you like, who creates many, many new options, avenues, opportunities for service, and all our acharyas who enhance and increase that. So if we can learn something from these three persons, is that they are each very, very exceptionally dear and exceptionally focused on the Lord in an exceptionally sincere way. There's nothing markata about them, nothing monkey-like about them. Complete transparency, complete pure focus on the pleasure of the Lord. And they're happy to do whatever pleases the Lord. Happy to assist in the development of Krishna consciousness and its propagation. That's a contribution. That's a positive contribution. Those contributions allow many, many more devotees in the future to experience the nectar of Krishna consciousness. So if we are empowered with these three things, if we have the request of the Vaishnavas, if we have the empowerment of the Lord, the permission of the Lord, and if we have a connection with the Lord, his empowerment, the permission of the Lord, the request of the Vaishnavas, and then empowerment, shakti from the Lord, then we can do something that is successful. And so these Goswamis, these two Goswamis, this composer of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they had nothing else in life, nothing material, but they had these three things. And with those, they've set the foundation that we are now enjoying now. We're enjoying. Our whole life, our whole day centers around starting by worshipping their lordships through the mercy of the Guru Parampara and the six Goswamis, through whom we can understand Lord Chaitanya. Through whom, through Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, we can understand Radha Krishna. That's their specific contribution, their specific status. So I'll stop there. I don't know if there's any questions or any comments. It's kind of a historical aspects, but I thought I'd focus more on the devotional, or some of their unique contributions today. Would you like to add anything? Anyone share something about these persons? Ian Prabhu?
Whether it's the appearance or disappearance of such personalities, we can offer prayers directly to them. Mm. And so I just wanted to hear from you probably what prayer we could, you know, offer to the three personalities as we meditate on them today.
Yes, well, a prayer is best offered according to a specific quality of the person. So I've mentioned a few special qualities for each person. Raghunath Das for me is like an emblem of renunciation. We can pray to him that our attempts at renunciation, renunciation doesn't exist for its own sake. So that's important to understand. It's not there just because we decided that's a good thing to do. Renunciation is there because the less we are putting our faculties and our consciousness in matter, the more capacity we have to offer to the Lord. So it's a simple thing that renunciation is not the goal for us. It's a path of life, path of consciousness that allows us to do more for Krishna. So we can pray to Raghunath Das that I may adopt such deep renunciation as you've exemplified. To Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, we can ask for deep. Understanding an entrance into the Srimad Bhagavatam. When Raghunath Bhatta Goswami would read the Bhagavatam, his tears would come from his eyes. And his copy of the Bhagavatam was all wet. And he was entering those leelas. He was reading those pastimes, entering those. So here's a person who's highly, highly advanced. And other great souls were coming to listen to him. Very special person. And one, if you have entrance to the Bhagavatam, you have entrance to spiritual life, because the Chaitanya Charitamrita contains so much Bhagavatam within it. It itself is considered almost like a purport to the Bhagavatam, in one sense. So many verses are included there. It's an extension of the Bhagavatam. And then we can say from Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, who's composed the Chaitanya Charitamrita, what was his mood? And what was his mood of offering a contribution? His mood was not to surpass the previous acharyas. His mood was not to try to outdo someone. He didn't think, I will now write a book which is better than anyone else's. His mood was, I'm going to offer this service, and Krishna's service and service opportunity is unlimited. And the previous Vaishnava's contributions are gems which I worship. And I would like to offer my own little, slightly subdued potential gem. That can be our mood as we engage in service from Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. So there, any real good devotional quality was found in all of these persons. And as they're very potent, you could really almost ask for anything that will help you in spiritual life from these persons. But here specifically are three examples of items that they expressed in great strength. Yes, David Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the class, Prabhu. I was wondering, is there any difference between a Goswami and a Swami in terms of the significance of the name, the title?
Not really, not in terms of meaning. A go means senses, and so the term Goswami means one who is not addicted to the senses, who has renounced sensory objects. You know, one in the nectar of instruction, Vacha Vegam, Manisha Krodha Vegam, Jibba Vegam, Udaro Pashta Vegam, Itan Veganyo Vishaheta Dira Saravam Apinam Pritivim Shashishyam. Person who follows that verse, you know, who is renounced from all of these things, who's controls mind, belly, genitals, and all of that, he's called a Goswami, Prabhupada says in the purport. That's the definition of a Goswami. So the word Swami often is used to also describe a renunciate. So there's no real difference there. Now there may be sometimes conventional details arise in our use of the words and how we apply them to different people. So traditionally it would have been the case that if a man took sannyas after having been married, he would be called Goswami. It's a convention. There's no spiritual kind of meaning to it. He would have Goswami added to his name. Whereas a person who is a lifelong brahmachari would be a swami. Now that's not a rigid guideline, but this is maybe why you hear the word used in some cases and not in some other cases. Bhakti Vigyan Goswami, Radhanath Swami. You know, there might be a reason there. That's a convention. But in terms of the substance and the meaning, no, they really mean the same thing.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Comments? Yes, Prajan Prabhu?
A feature seems to be of these Swamis, the Goswamis, Radhanath Das Goswami, they had a simplicity in their life. They kept everything very simple. Mm. They were satisfied and peaceful with whatever came and or didn't come. And that's a very nice thing because Prabhupada quotes, you know, the secret of surrendering to Krishna is that such a surrendered person sees that everything is part of Krishna's plan. No matter what I am doing now, I'm meant to be doing. So let me do it with my full attention. They're not looking anywhere else. And then it says, let me come absorbed in such service. It means that we're not looking anywhere else for anything because, nothing's by chance. And realizing that everything comes from Krishna, you know, their life is very simple. They're not looking for anything else other than the service that they can get or their lack of service or whatever. It's a realization of the moment, really. It was completely natural to them. They were very simple in their approach. They weren't copying anybody. This surrendering to Krishna, they just did what was natural to their nature.
Yes.
They didn't look at anybody else in that way.
Well, what I would add is that it became natural because that's actually the natural position of the living entity, that naturally we are meant for the pleasure of the Lord. So when we are 100% connected to the Lord, that's when we can say we're naturally situated. However, when one is engaging in or embarking on the path of renunciation, which of course we do only for the purpose of serving the Lord, they very much need to look at others. They need to see the examples of renunciation as exemplified by others. And they do undergo austerities. So when we say natural, it should not be taken to mean that it's easy for them. Austerities, when they're practiced, are not easy for anyone. There is physical disturbance. There is mental pressure, you can say. There is mental control that's required. So each of these personalities, when they were practicing, they had all these difficulties. But they happily accepted renunciation. They happily accepted those difficulties. And that's what's inspiring, that in the pursuit of eventually being naturally situated, one may actually have to make some concrete steps and concrete efforts. And that does involve looking at the example of others. So after all, if there are no examples around, then it's all words on a page. And yes, there may be one person who naturally, spontaneously is renounced, you know, from day one. Maybe someone like Vishwarup, Lord Chaitanya's brother. Maybe someone like that is naturally renounced from day one. But that's not going to be many people. Rather, renunciation is something for all people to embark on for the purpose of serving the Lord. So for that, they need to go through that process where it's a struggle. It's more of a struggle. It's a struggle, 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 struggle. And eventually it becomes a struggle that's relishable and becomes irrelevant, because the person is completely off the material platform. So it simply doesn't matter that the body is giving them this trouble or that trouble. Krishna, when a person gets to that stage, takes personal charge of that devotee's body. Takes personal charge of it. And it's considered, and the person walks around like Jad Bharat or like Prahlad Maharaj, and it's considered that their body's flapping. Body's flapping, but they are not there. It's acting under the control of Krishna, but their mind is focused on Krishna and is in Vrindavan ultimately. But before that point, in the stage of a person's renunciation progress, there's going to be a lot of trouble. That's what renunciation means. So, yes, this just something to add to that. That yes, the natural situation of renunciation is there because it's our natural constitutional position to be servants of the Lord and nothing else. So some people like the idea of being servants of the Lord, but they don't like the nothing else part. So therefore they hold on to a whole range of other things along the way.
And so the renunciation we've been asked to do is basically to follow Prabhupada, what he asks of us, isn't it? In yes. Regulative principles, yes. 16 rounds and this yes. sort of thing.
That's the base level of renunciation, and then that will naturally manifest for different people into different forms. It will naturally manifest. Some people need to really practice austerities with their bodies, otherwise their mind goes funny. Others, for some other people, the body is just enough austerity on a daily basis anyway. So it doesn't become a major portion of their life to keep doing bodily austerities. For others, controlling the mind becomes a more important job, because their mind is all over the place, even though they may externally be austere. Then the effort for them is to control the mind. And so yeah, different people will progress in different ways, actually, because each person's got a different set of problems to deal with.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Okay, so we'll stop there. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami ki. Srila Raghunath Bhatta Goswami ki. Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.